On this episode of The Big Number with Dan Devine, we dive into the numbers to try and answer these questions. Have the Boston Celtics solved basketball with their crazy three-point shooting? Will Derek White make the All-Star team? And why is that three-point strategy so low-key smart? That and more coming up right now. I'm Tom Haverstrow, and welcome to another edition of the Big Number Podcast with Dan Devine. It drops every Thursday right here at Yahoo Sports. Be sure to smash that like button, that subscribe button. Give us a five-star review. Actually, during the holidays, please, if you can, steal all of your family members' homes, their phones, also their homes, if it helps the podcast. Steal their phones, go in there, go to the podcast platforms, subscribe, rate, and review. And Dan, I suggest you do that too. If you can, steal all of your in-laws and family members, and if your little nephews and nieces have phones, do that too. You'll just really charm them over the holidays. Hey, Dan, what's up, man?
I'm really looking forward to seeing all of them and going, listen, you guys, I don't ask you for jack all year long. This year, in the season of giving, this time, this special family time, do me one solid for once. They're like, Uncle Dan, weird energy to be bringing. Why are you at the kids' table? Go away. You know, like, pie and cheer over there. But yes, absolutely. I'm excited to juke the stats by stealing my family members' devices. Tom, let's put up some numbers, brother. What do we got today? What is our big number for this Thanksgiving week smorgasbord extravaganza?
We're going to focus on the Boston Celtics today. We're going deep on the Boston Celtics. And this week's big number, Dan, is 910.
That's the number of three.
That's a very big number. It is the number of three-pointers that the Boston Celtics have taken this season already in just 18 games.
18 games.
Here's how crazy that is. Through Tuesday's games, it's 100 more three-pointers taken than any other NBA team. This is the three-point era, and they're already taking 100 more threes than the next highest team, whether it's the Charlotte Hornets or the Cleveland Cavaliers or the Chicago Bulls. They're 100 three-pointers ahead of everybody else. They're averaging 50.6 three-point attempts per game, and they have taken at least 40 attempts in every single game of the season, which means they have a running 18-game streak of shooting at least 40 three-point attempts. And I'm going to put that in perspective. The Raptors, the Nuggets, the Pelicans are on an 18-game streak right now of not shooting 40 three-pointers in a game. So the Celtics, the bare minimum is higher than the maximum of several NBA teams this season. And it's not just this season. You go back, let's dial it back. Let's go back like Jack and Kate in Lost. Let's go back to 1992, okay? The Chicago Bulls, they beat the Portland Trail Blazers in the NBA Finals. The MJ Shrug game where he hits six three-pointers in that game, which seemed like a lot back then. Beside the point, what I want to tell you is that in just 18 games this season, the Boston Celtics have already taken more three-pointers than that Chicago Bulls team did in the full entire 82-game season.
Man.
And that's still true if you double the Chicago Bulls' three-point attempts. So, yeah, that's right. 67-win team, go to the NBA Finals, win the back-to-back championships. They had 454 three-point attempts that season for the entire 82-game schedule. And that, my friends, is math. 454 times 2 equals 908, which is less than 910, which is the big number today. And even more recently, you can look at as recently as 2007. There were multiple teams in the span of Chris Paul's career, Steph Curry's career, Kevin Durant, LeBron James. There have been teams that didn't take a 910 three-point attempts in the entire 82-game season as recently as 2007. So I think today I want to kind of level set how crazy this is, Dan, and also explain something that I've hit on and we've talked about is, Yeah, there's a lot of threes in today's NBA game, but the Celtics are doing it in ways that isn't just pull up down the floor and take a three-pointer. They are doing it in a lot of variety, and they're doing it in ways that we kind of are innovating on the fly. We're seeing things that the Celtics are doing that is kind of new and inventive. And I want to talk deep about the Boston Celtics three-point barrage and mostly just do a lot of this. Like, oh my God. Like, are you serious how many three-pointers are taken? And of course, they're winning a lot of these games. But Dan, I want to ask you, you know, is this a team that has solved basketball because they're coming off a championship? They took 42 three-pointers last season, which was the most for any champion in NBA history. Not the Warriors teams, it's the Boston Celtics that set the table or set the record for most three-point attempts per game for a team that won the championship. That was 42. Now they're at 50. And they're winning a ton of games playing this way with the five-out system with Kristaps Porzingis back. Did they solve basketball, Dan?
Well, first, I want to ask, I think I know the answer to this question, but since you've looked it up, has any team before this ever gotten to 53s in a game as an average? Like that's got to be an all-time record for the average, right?
That's the all-time record. The Houston Rockets under James Harden and Mike D'Antoni, those guys, they had, I think, 45 per game. So this is already setting an NBA record what we're at. I probably should have put that at the top. This is historic. But in also, it's not just the history, it's the peers, right, Dan? It's that they're doing this in a league that just watched them do this last year, and the Celtics are pressing on the gas with eight more three-pointers than they did last year.
Yeah, there's it's funny that I'm thinking about Moneyball, which probably is about right considering the topic we're at hand here. But in the movie version of Moneyball, where Brad Pitt winds up getting the A's lose and Brad Pitt winds up getting brought over to have a meeting with the Boston Red Sox, right? And the idea is like anybody who's not using your strategies in the future is going to be left behind, and they're going to be watching the Boston Red Sox, win the World Series. Just kind of move that over to a different sport and the same city and the same idea. Like the thought process behind everything that Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni and James Harden wanted to do in Houston and the basketball laboratory there, the Celtics have onboarded that and, ramped it up another level and been using that to, historic success. The solution, that's a funny turn of phrase. It's one that I had thought about too. After the Celtics won the title last year, and everybody's writing their postmortems on it, that was something that I kind of settled on. Like, this feels like this formulation of Joe Mazzulla ball, and I think he's a pretty important character in this that we'll come to talk about. It's not just everybody's good at shooting. It's everybody's good at shooting, and everybody's a screener, and everybody's a passer, and everybody's a cutter, and multiple guys are post-up threats, and everybody can kind of do everything. There's like a positionless basketball, the dream of Free Darko, but maybe like a little more bloodless, it has been brought to bear here, where all of these roles are interchangeable, and there's a lot of foresight and strokes of luck and development that had to bring us to this point, but it's that's the way the offense can operate. And what makes it stand up is that the same is true on the other end, or maybe not always. You don't always love having Kristaps Porzingis switched out onto a player on the perimeter, right? Onto a guard. But generally, we can make you have to concede something without needing to concede anything ourselves because of the sort of amoeba-like qualities of the defense and the, harmonic overlapping of skill sets on offense that, for the way the game is played now, where everyone is aware that three is more than two, but how do you get them? How do you generate them? And how do you create them in ways that puts defenses constantly on the back foot, making them guard more space and then not really giving that opponent any foothold into great offense on a consistent basis, no easy ways to attack for them. It does feel like a solution to modern basketball. And I think that that has had an emotional toll. It's taken an emotional toll on a lot of people where they look at it and say, but I don't want this to be solved. I don't want what I find, beautiful about this is the struggle in the trying. And the Celtics oftentimes wind up looking like a, frictionless machine. And I think that might overlook or maybe, you know, buff out some of the hard work and the difficult things and the sort of great creativity that goes into what they do. But yeah, it does feel like this is the apex of something. And they getting there with the title team and then pushing it up another notch is pretty incredible. But that is what we have seen through these 18 games, as the big number suggests. You know, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and let's be clear. They're not even number one in the standings in the Eastern Conference. Right. The 17-1 Cleveland Cavaliers, as we're recording this, only take 37 per game as a team. So 13 fewer than what the Celtics are pushing out every single night. And they're pretty good. Their offense is pretty good, as we've seen so far this season. And also OKC, they're doing things a lot differently than the Boston Celtics. And with Chet Holmgren out, they've got Isaiah Hartenstein back, and it's a different look than what you're seeing with the Boston Celtics. But the idea of a five-out system, Porzingis back, he immediately when he comes into that game on Monday night, he launches a logo three, and you're just like, this is such an alien sport to what we grew up with, is that you got this dude, this unicorn, 7'3", and he bombs away in his first minute back. He is taking and launching a 30-foot three, and you know, he looked a little shaky in the beginning, but he got better as the game went on. But I want people who are listening to this show right now to stop what you do. If you have League Pass, stop what you're doing, go back and watch Monday's second quarter against the Los Angeles Clippers on the NBC Sports broadcast, because Brad Stevens joined the broadcast for that second quarter, and it was amazing to listen to Brad, the architect of the team front office wise and the roster, but also an elite head coach at Butler and with the Boston Celtics, watching this beautiful offense unfurl and move around the floor. He was almost like he was narrating as the passes were happening and the actions were happening. And here's what happened in that second quarter. Hauser 3, Pritchard 3, Pritchard 3, White 3, Jaylen Brown 3, Jaylen 3, White 3, Pritchard 3, Kata Dunk, okay?
There you go.
Derek White 3, Derek White 3, and then to top it all off, Jaylen Brown 4. Okay? That was like 10 threes in 5 minutes. They had 12 threes for the quarter. And I looked this up, Dan. That is a season record for any quarter this year. There's not been 12 threes in any quarter this year. And wow. Actually, in the second quarter, that is the most threes that we've seen made in the second quarter since 4 years ago. Like, this is a ridiculous thing that we just saw on Monday night. And we had Brad Stevens commentating all the while. And what was interesting also to me was seeing all the different actions as they're happening. You know, Sam Hauser's running, they're running a Spain pick and roll, and Sam Hauser's, you know, screening for Porzingis' roll man, and then he pops out, and Porzingis gets an open three because of that, and all these things where Drew Holiday is ducking in as a big man in the dunker spot, cutting behind James Harden, who's already, you know, fallen asleep defensively because he's trying to be the low man in that pick and roll action, and Drew Holiday catches the pass, kicks out to Jaylen Brown in the corner for that 4-point play. And Brad Stevens is talking. He's like, they had to sink in because of Drew's basket cut, sink in to stop Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday noticed that, kicked out for Jaylen Brown. And then I think it was Chris Dunn who fouled Jaylen Brown on the 3-pointer that went in. And all these actions speak to the fact that there are so many different ways they're getting these threes. And I think Joe Mazzulla gets a lot of credit as the guy who said 2 years ago when the Boston papers were saying there are too many threes, this was 2 years ago, he called out and said, like, look, this is, I like threes. I love the spacing that we have. This is the way it's going to be going forward. And he's only taken it another level. So this Boston Celtics team's with this team with the way they shoot the rock from downtown, it's not going anywhere. And I think there's a lot of little tiny storylines that I want to get into here with the three-point shooting. You've got some little numbers that you're going to bring to the table here. I still can't believe that. Chicago Bulls, you double the number of threes that they took in that 92 championship season, and we're already eclipsing that with the Boston Celtics. We're going to hit those numbers when we come back quickly after the break.
Hey,
All right, Dan, that was the big number at the top, but you got some other numbers that we need to get into. I think there's going to be four here in this upcoming segment. What's the first one you got for us?
Well, first, we got to remind the people, Tom, why do we go with three-pointers?
Because there are no fours.
So that's why we go four little numbers here. First little number is plus 12.4%. That is the Celtics' advantage in what is defined as Morey ball rate, tracked by our friend Jared Dubin at Last Night in Basketball. Morey ball rate is basically the share of a team's shots that come from within 3 feet of the basket or beyond the three-point line. You take that and then you subtract how often you give up those shots to your opponent. So basically, who's winning and who's losing the math battle on any given night? You mentioned Joe Mazzulla talking to the Boston Press a couple years ago about how much he loves math, how much he likes the space that it creates and that advantage that you get. Brad Stevens also, in the way that he constructed this team, it's not just about the way you can create space on offense. It's about taking it away on defense, limiting the three-point shots, protecting the rim with Porzingis and Al Horford back there. And even the guards and the wings that protect the rim in Boston. The Celtics are third in the league in offensive Morey ball rate heading into Wednesday morning here. And they're first in defensive Morey ball rate. So they prevent shots at the rim and three-pointers at an elite level. You subtract what they give up from what they create and you wind up with a 12.4% differential. That is the largest in the league by a lot. Number two, the Orlando Magic at plus 9.4. So three full percentage points in terms of difference. This is Joe Mazzulla saying this formula works. This system works. We're going to create more shots at the rim and more shots from three-point land. We're going to take them away on defense. It worked for us. We're just going to hit the gas and keep going even further. And again, you see the success that it leads to. Why not lean into it all the way?
So when you talk about that, it reminds me of the fact that like those D'Antoni teams tried to do this where they were going to go with Morey ball, but did they have the defenders to pull it off? They had PJ Tucker, they had Luke and Bob Mute for a stretch there. They had different, you know, Trevor Ariza. They had different bodies that could try to take away, you know, Clint Capella, try to take away the rim, but it seemed like an either or proposition. You can either like lock down the perimeter and own the perimeter, or you have to take away the paint. But personnel-wise, they can't match up with what this Boston Celtics team is. I mean, you've got Kristaps Porzingis now, but also Al Horford. You've got Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Drew Holiday. They could be fives in any system, the way that they play and how strong they are, how smart they are, the basketball IQ. So they just have this personnel advantage compared to everybody else in the NBA. And that comes with the continuity, that comes with a top-down approach of like the organization knows what they're about. You know, when Ime Udoka was let go and then they brought in Joe Mazzulla, he was handpicked by Brad Stevens and the organization. Like they didn't go outside the organization and hire somebody. They just said, you know what? We know that what our brand of basketball, that through line is going to happen from top to bottom all the way to the floor. And you're seeing it with the way they play. And also, it's not just the shots, you know, it's also the strategy that if you do take a lot of threes and a lot of them are pull-up threes in the pick and roll, you're also gaining an advantage in the turnover column. And that's another Morey ball thing, is that Mike D'Antoni with James Harden and the way that they orchestrated that offense, Dan, there was this other piece of Morey ball was like, we're going to limit the number of passes and just try to create space using James Harden's unbelievable handle and ability to blow by the defender with his step backs. And you're seeing Jason Tatum do a lot of the same thing where it's like he's in his bag, he's doing step backs, he's trying to go one-on-one. He's one of the top ISO guys in the NBA, which is a huge development compared to where they were pre-Mazzulla ball. And lo and behold, they have the best turnover rate offensively in the NBA. And that's not a mistake. That's not a coincidence. As we say on Basketball Illuminati, there are no mistakes. There are no coincidences in basketball. This team is designed to maximize that Morey ball shot percentage, but also limit turnovers by not overpassing. We tend to think of the Spurs basketball as like the apex, their nirvana of basketball. But also passing can get you in trouble. That is, the majority of turnovers are coming from bad passes or intercepted passes. And there's that element too, Dan, of they are getting to the shots that they want, but also it limits the number of turnovers that they have that can be maddening when you have Golden State, for example, passing a ton, but a lot of those passes end up as turnovers, which has kind of been their Achilles heel over the last few years.
It also, you know, if you're taking a ton of pull-up threes, and a lot of those are going to come from the middle of the floor, you know, above the break on the three-point line, you have somebody sort of guaranteed to be back. And if you're not turning the ball over and you have somebody sort of guaranteed to be back, you're more likely to have somebody in transition defense position, right? Whether that's a big man shooting trail threes or one of your guards on the pull-up. The Celtics are routinely one of the best teams in transition defense. I think they're eighth this year in transition frequency, like how often they let the teams they're playing get out and run, and eighth in points allowed per possession on that end. So like you're cutting off another way to cut off easy baskets and to, you know, prevent yourself from being in disadvantageous situations. Mazzulla had talked about during the finals, like the two ends of the floor being connected. These are ways, it's an organizational, as you mentioned, all around sort of holistic philosophy to where they're getting the shots that they want and not giving up the shots that they don't want to. A really important player in that is the subject of our number two, our second little number here, 635. That is the true shooting percentage of Derek Richard White. Derek White, who his arrival from the Spurs really turned into like a watershed moment for this iteration of the Celtics. 635 true shooting percentage, which true shooting percentage takes into account how accurate you are on two-point shots, three-point shots, foul shots. That is a career high for Derek White, which marks the third time in three seasons as a Celtic he has set a new career high. Derek White has been the ratcheting up the confidence in his three-point shot and the imprimatur from the coaching staff of let him fly, let him go, has completely unlocked his game. We talk a lot about what Derek White does for the Celtics defense, right? We, you know, the partnership with Jrue Holiday, the way they can switch his rim protection, which is like Dwayne Wade-like at this point from the guard spot. What has Derek White meant for this Celtics offense?
He's been interchangeable where they can put him in as the screener, as the cutter. And they talked about it, Brad Stevens, in the broadcast of that Monday night game where he was like, you know, these basket cuts on the pick and roll action. They have a low man, James Harden, like I talked about earlier. You know, Derek White is so smart at timing from the corner, cutting behind the defense, and then that scrambles everything that they want to do. He's not just great at the cuts, the ghost cuts that Coop Moore had over at NBA.com for the Miami Heat. You know, we watched Dwayne Wade do this and destroy defenses when they're watching LeBron James or Shane Battier or Ray Allen. There goes the basket cut behind the defense, and it's easy. It's one of the reasons why Dwayne Wade had one of the best off-ball gravity numbers. The respect that he got at the three-point line had nothing to do with his three-point shot. It had to do with those cuts because they couldn't leave him. You take your eye off of Dwayne Wade in the corner and he's going to cut behind the defense in ways that Brad Stevens on the broadcast was like, man, Derek White, what a great cut there. Dwayne Wade used to be so good at that. But there's so many guys that aren't as smart as Derek White or Jrue Holiday to make that precise time and the speed and the space where you go to catch that pass from Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. And it's that kind of versatility offensively that I think is really interesting about Derek White, that he's added so many elements to his game where he's now shooting 42% from downtown. And, you know, when he was with the Spurs, I don't think you could envision this version of a guy who is all-star caliber, both ends of the floor, and being a shot creator and a finisher in a dunker spot. Like, what? This is a totally new way of thinking. And I think it's the versatility that Derek White offers Jrue Holiday in the same way, where it's like, it is positionless. And it reminds me, to bring it back to those Miami Heat teams, when they spaced with Chris Bosh at the five and they won the 2012 NBA Finals, I remember Spo telling me that after that game that they won, after he won the NBA Finals, he goes to his phone and he says to Mike D'Antoni, he texts him, "Thank you, this one's for you." And I remember being like, that is so weird that like Eric Spoelstra would text Mike D'Antoni. But the point was, Mike D'Antoni never won a championship, but the way that he spaced the floor and had those actions in the 7 seconds or less offense and the five out system or the pick high pick and roll system that they used to win that championship, you could space the floor as a jump shooting team and win a championship. And I think this Boston Celtics team, in many ways, are saying thank you every single night they play to Mike D'Antoni and the Maury Ball stuff that they did. Because I just don't see Derek White being as effective as he is in other systems. But when you put him in this system that spaces and has these actions off the floor, Derek White is an all-star in that.
You're absolutely right. I mean, they very well could be the case this year. I know there was a push last season with the Celtics off to the start that they were for White to get all-star consideration. Didn't wind up happening. But this season, he's averaging better than 18 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists per game on that aforementioned 6.35 true shooting. The list of guys who've done that is like 15 or 16 names long, and all of them have been all-stars or all-NBA selections. So that could absolutely be in the offing for Derek White. Crowded field in the East, especially with Cleveland off to the start that it has been. But certainly he'll be up in consideration for that. You talk about the Celtics are not a high passing team, right? They're not because they want to keep the turnovers down. They're leaning into their pull-up three-point shooting. Here's an interesting little number. 4.7. That's how many secondary assists, hockey assists, the pass that leads to the pass that leads to the shot, the Celtics average per game. That is second in the entire NBA behind only the Warriors, who, as you mentioned, are way up at the top of the charts in passes. They are free-flowing. Wow. They're freewheeling. They throw the ball all over the gym, sometimes throw it into the fifth row with the popcorn man. But the Celtics are a much more restrained team and then yet also are right up there alongside the Warriors in secondary assists. And that has been consistent. Even going back to the Ime Udoka season, Boston ranked second, third, and now second again in secondary assists. So this is clearly something that is a function of their offense. What does that number, 4.7 secondary assists per game, say to you about the way the Celtics operate and generate their shots?
The swing. You know, you drive into the paint, kick out, and swing. They do that about as well as any team, not just this year, but we've ever seen, is their ability to penetrate. And if they don't get a good look at the rim, they're going to kick out. And then as soon as you collapse onto that three-point shooter, swing it over to Drew Holiday, and he's going to hit the three. Or swing it over to Jaylen Brown, and he's going to hit the three. Or swing it over to Derek White, Peyton Pritchard. They do a great job of passing up a good shot for a better shot. And that's what I think that number suggests, is that drive and kick, and they keep putting you in a blender to try to get that excellent look beyond the three-point line. That's what that swing factor does, is it ends up in the hockey assist. And, you know, I'm guilty of it. I sometimes watch Jason Tatum dribble the air out of the ball, and I'm like, can we just get some more inventive offense? Can we get some more drive and kick, or at least get into the paint? They do that a bunch, but they also sometimes do dwell on these Jason Tatum pull-ups or ISOs, and they don't get the action that I would like to see. But they do it enough that they're second in the league in hockey assists. So like, you can't even say that they don't get into those actions where you get ball movement, because then they would be middle of the pack or bottom of the NBA if they didn't get to those actions enough. And Dan, real quick, I want to mention this stat, because I think it's a both glass half full and glass half empty look at Jason Tatum. In that first game with his remodeled improved, tightened three-point mechanics, he blew the lid off. We saw it in that first game, the opening night, 8 of 11 from downtown, but more importantly, 8 of 10 on pull-up threes off the dribble, 8 of 10. Since that, he shot 30% on pull-up threes this season. So I want to say that the improved mechanics have led to Jason Tatum being more effective on those catch and shoots with a quicker release or on those pull-ups. Again, it's a lot easier to go up when you don't have that like little dance he does to get that three-point shot up. But with that quickened mechanics, we are seeing kind of that efficiency fall off on those pull-up threes from Jason Tatum since that breakout game on opening night. But again, like what you say, even if he's taking that pull-up three and above the break, He's going to run back on transition defense and be that guy that's not going to allow them to get numbers going the other way. And they're a great offensive rebounding team on their three-pointers. And it limits their turnovers. If he's getting to a pull-up three-pointer, it's most likely he's not going to try to overpass and get up, you know, a crazy swing or a skip pass. And he's going to finish a possession with a three-point look that, even if you're shooting 30%, that's still a 0.9 points per possession play rather than a turnover or a possible turnover. So, Dan, I like the hockey assist. It's an awesome representation of why they're not doing just one action every time. They are swinging, and that's really beautiful basketball. What else you got for me?
Well, I want to ask you, can I cheat very quickly and give you a sub number here?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it. Let's sub these numbers. Yeah.
151 is how many possessions the Celtics have finished out of post-ups this year, whether you include the pass that leads to the shot out of the post. And that, I think, speaks to what you're talking about. Like, yeah, it's not always the most inventive, the most creative, but they're finding ways to invert the offense a lot of times because they're realizing, Joe Mazzulla realizes, Jason Tatum can take smalls into the... We run our guard-guard screen action or our wing-wing screen actions, and we can get Tatum posted up on a point guard. Tatum's going to be able to put that guy, you know, to take him to the woodshed down low. Jaylen Brown, really good at that, super strong, and has become a better, more fluid passer out of those situations, reads the floor, maps it better. Jrue Holiday is a bully on the block against opposing guards. So it's, and obviously, so they're a fourth in the NBA in terms of how many possessions they finished out of post-ups. That's without Porzingis being healthy until just now. And he's obviously their big, you know, their big joker, their big ace in those situations to try to create mismatches for him in the post. So I expect that number is only going to go up. And so like the Nuggets, Bucks, and Lakers are the top three in post-up finishes, and they all have those big behemoths. The Celtics haven't, and they're still right there because they've realized this is a way we create the mismatch, we go to the block, we draw help, that opens up that pitch out and those swings to create those looks. So it's another, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and the Celtics have found a ton of them thus far this season. I'm going to go with the last of my four little numbers here, 8.33. That is how many points per 100 possessions above league average the Celtics offense has been thus far this season, according to pbpstats.com. We've talked about these numbers before, the relative offensive and defensive efficiency. We were talking about it with the Thunder in terms of like how much stingier they are than a league average defense and how historic that is. 8.33 relative offensive efficiency. That is the fourth biggest gap above league average offense in a single season of any team since 2000. So last quarter century, 8.33 top four number. And now here's the interesting subpart to this one. Two of the other three are also from this season. It's the Cavs at 10.06 and the Knicks, fresh off of absolutely hammering Denver on Monday, at plus 9.99. So the Celtics to actually the third offense this season in that regard. So I'm asking, do you think that is a case of like imitation is the sincerest form of flattery? The way that the Cavs and Celtic and Knicks have had to look at the Celtics and say like, if you can't beat them, join them? Or like, which of those numbers do you kind of buy as being the most steady holding up? What do you think that those things in terms of how far those teams are above the rest of the pack right now tells us about the way the ecosystems are working offensively these days?
Oh, they're absolutely copying the blueprint. I mean, you look at the way that the Cavs are trying to get Evan Mobley more into the pick and roll actions, ball handler, creating, taking the ball down the, you know, the floor and initiating actions in the same way that, you know, Kristaps Porzingis, the Al Horfords of the world. Like Al Horford was the first guy that I remember who would like catch a rebound and just go full court. Like Joakim Noah on that Florida team, they would just like start fast breaks because they were bigs and they were like, oh, we're basically big guards. And the way that the Celtics do that, play with the five out system where they're totally fine with, you know, actions initiating by Kristaps. And you saw that even in the first game back this year. I think it is they're copying the blueprint of having a really skilled five and trying to invert the offense and having those guys just be a little bit more dynamic and forcing really tough decisions for the defense. And I'll also throw this at you. I think that 8.33 is probably a little low. I think you're going to see the Celtics even get better from beyond the arc. And I know that's terrifying for the rest of the league. But last year, they were a much better three-point shooting than what we've seen so far this year, where that 37.5% as a three-point shooting team. Like, I didn't say the big number was 43.8%, right? Like I said, it was 910, which is the attempts that they've taken. I could have easily mentioned the makes, but they haven't hit them at an extreme rate as much as their attempts are. And here are some of the numbers of the roster, what they're shooting at three-point land this season. You kind of look at it and you're like, wait a minute, they might be even better going forward. Jaylen Brown, 33%. From downtown. Drew Holiday, 34.8%. Porzingis, obviously, his first game back, he didn't shoot very well from beyond the arc, even though he had the kind of three-point shot profile that you expected. He was 1-for-6 in that one. And then Sam Hauser, who just got the extension because he's one of the most prolific and most high-performing three-point shooter, stretchy guy in the league, he's at 34.9% this season. Mm. So what you're looking at is a team that, yeah, they've got another level to get to. And I think that the 8.33 might actually look a little small compared to where they could get to in the future, especially now that Kristaps Porzingis is back on the floor.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you're right to note, like, that is a maybe a soft team-wide three-point shooting number. So what do you do when the accuracy isn't necessarily where you want it to be? You go to Costco and you buy in bulk, right? And so that's where we get to 910, this week's big number.
Crazy. They have, listen to this. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 players. Their top 8 guys are all taking 5 threes per game. That is insane. 8, all 8 guys in their rotation are taking at least 5 threes per game.
I mean, yeah, like, listen, this is you can like it or you can dislike it, and you can have aesthetic arguments against it. And I will hold space for all of those. But it's inarguable that it's working. You know, they have found an answer. And I think that, to me, in the broader context of, like, where do we go from here? I am looking forward to whatever the defensive answer to this is. And maybe we get to a point where it isn't one and there needs to be a structural change. We talked last week about shot deserts and about the idea of potential changes to scoring or changes to lines on the floor, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, every time, you know, the spread offense takes off, then simulated pressures become on the rise and defenses start doing weird stuff and dropping defensive linemen back and rushing guys from different spots. And all of a sudden there's an answer. It might take a little while, but someone comes up with an idea. What if we tried this? And what seems, you know, like, crackpot becomes practice for everybody. So we've seen it throughout the NBA. We, you know, the overload strong side blitz, help from Tom Thibodeau, to more blitzing of the pick and roll, to more switching with the Golden State teams. It takes a while sometimes, but defenses come up with some answers, and I'm really looking forward to finding out what some of the incredibly creative defensive coordinators in the NBA come up with this, because it certainly seems like they're going to need some more answers.
All right, right after the break, we're going to get into some over-unders where we can talk all we want, but we need to walk the walk and put some numbers in print. All right, so the Boston Celtics may have solved basketball until further notice. We've gone through all the three-point numbers. We're going to make three, because that is the episode that we're talking about today, is all about threes. We're going to talk about three different new over-unders that we're going to set for our little scoreboard that we have here. We have a running tally of all the over-unders we've done this season, and right now the scoreboard is 10-6 in my favor, Dan. But that Russell Westbrook over on-court offensive rating when he's on the floor has been a huge win for you. Recently, he's, you know, shared the court with that guy Nikola Jokic a lot,
which is helpful, very helpful,
very helpful. It's at 104.7 is his on-court offensive rating. Just a note, when according to PBPStats.com. When Russell Westbrook is sharing the floor with Jokic, the team's offensive rating is 121. And when Russell Westbrook is without Jokic, it goes down from 121 to 98. So that's where the line was. We said it. The over-under was at 100. And so when he plays with Jokic, you know what? That's one way to inflate that number, is to play with, like, maybe the greatest offensive player of all time when it's said and done. Dan, another one that I just want to point out here that is on the line is Bam Adebayo. He's starting to creep up on his three-point attempts this season. He's at 2.7 per 36. And we're going to see that, you know, track that going forward. We both had the over on that. So we'll see what happens there. And Isaiah Hartenstein is back, but hasn't taken a three. I got three more for you. Are you ready to close the gap?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great. Let's hear these numbers.
So first one in the batch, we've got Boston Celtics, 3-point attempts per game. They are currently at 50.6. I'm going to set the over-under at 50 flat. 50 flat. Are they going to be above that or below? I'm actually going to be, I'm going to go under here. I'm going to take the under. I think 50.6 is a little steep. I think they're going to end up at like 48.8. And remember when they had like the opportunity to break the 3-point record on the opening night and they just completely fell apart? Maybe it'll be like a microcosm of this, is that they're going to try to get above 50 and then it's going to fall short at the very end. I'm going to say under at 53-point attempts per game, which would be an NBA record.
I'm going the other way, because what they didn't do on opening night was stop shooting. They kept putting them up and got 61 up. Also, I don't know if you know this, Joe Mazzulla and these Celtics, they're not defending champions. Joe Mazzulla wants you to know they're attacking champions, because animals in the animal kingdom don't defend. They attack. They're predators. And I think they're going to go after this 50 hard. I think that Joe Mazzulla thinks this is the way to win. He has proof. He has a proof of concept. It's working. When they face, when they face adversity, they're just going to keep firing even more. And I think they're going to go over. Give me the over on 50. I think we're blowing this record out of the water.
I'm already regretting it. I'm already regretting the under.
Much like
you
the
know
Russell
what?
Westbrook
I'm not
number.
Regretting.
There you go.
My take is that Joe Mazzulla is Centel proof.
There's nothing he can say that you'd be like, that's fake.
Yeah. Like Centel could put up something that Joe Mazzulla said and I'd be like, you know what? I totally believe that. That is something he would say. And it's just every game he has something maniacal quote. That he just like eats the parquet floor for breakfast or something like that. And you're like, yeah, that is Joe Mazzulla. I totally get that. All right, next one, Jaylen Brown's 3-point field goal percentage. Right now it is a 1/3, a 33.3%. I think this is another reason why I think that 8.33 you mentioned earlier about how much better they are offensively than the average, I think it might trend upward because of guys like Jaylen Brown that I think are actually going to come out of this shooting slump, so to speak. Last year is at 35.4. He's a career 36% 3-point shooter. I'm going to go over on Jaylen Brown, the 33.3 field goal percentage from downtown. What say you? That is the over-under.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to go over on this. I think underperformed the shot quality a little bit. I think that there's an opportunity for some growth there. Like, he's not an elite shooter. Like, there were a couple seasons where he was up around 39, 40%. That has not been the neighborhood he settled in, but much more around league average, even on higher volume. So yeah, give me the over on Jaylen Brown, who, by the way, has continued to find a ton of ways to make important contributions and been a super impactful two-way player. Even without the three falling at a high clip. And he's brought the seatbelt celebration to the Celtics, which I know other teams and other sports have been doing that, but it's a joy to me every time I see it. It's right up there with the crotch chop in terms of what I enjoy seeing from my celebrators most. So Jaylen Brown, all good things. I'm going to go over on it.
D-Generation X, you were a fan of D-Generation X?
Of course. I was an impressionable child in the Attitude Era. How could I have not been?
Yeah, the Triple H era, China. What was that dude's name? I'm forgetting, with the long black hair. X-Pac.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yes. Sean Waltman, the 1-2-3 kid. We can do this all day, but Tom, we got time. We got to keep moving. Give me these numbers. Let's keep moving.
All right. Fine. Derek White, true shooting percentage is one of your little big numbers there in the B block. 61.1 last season, 63.5 true shooting percentage this season. I'm going to set the over-under at 62. Over under 62, Derek White's true shooting percentage by the end of the season. What say you?
I'm going to go under because if it just dips a little bit and gets to, you know, his previous career high was 61.1, as you said, that's still super high given the volume of shots he's taking and the difficulty of the shots he's taking. So if he cools off a little bit from like 41.5% from three to 40, I think that drops me down into a neighborhood where I feel comfortable with this. So It would not surprise me if Derek White again sets another career high with this, the way he's functioned in the Celtics offense. But 635 is running awful hot. So I say take a step back there. My apologies to Derek White and to his father, who's a nice follower on Twitter and all these sorts of things. But we're going to say our apologies and still love your son.
You are lighting the fire underneath his son. And I would say under as well. So he can direct that hate to me as well. I'm going to go under. I think part of the reason why I am taking the under on this one is just, I think they, like you said, the shot quality or the shot difficulty, I think will increase when the season drags on. I suspect that the Celtics are probably going to like sit Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown a little bit more as they get into the home stretch here. And you're going to see Derek White have to take on more scoring responsibility. They've been pretty healthy this season outside of Kristaps Porzingis. Jaylen Brown has been out for a couple games, but Jason Tatum has played in every single game, one of 17 players, star players, that have played every game this season, which is still a very small number. Maybe that'll be a big number later, the number of injuries among star players. But Jason Tatum so far has been remarkably healthy and played in every single game. So Derek White, I think in the future, will have to take on a little bit more of scoring. But dude, the guy has increased more scoring this season and his true shooting percentage has only gone up. So maybe I'm totally thinking backwards on this thing. Maybe it's a small sample size. I'm going to go under on Derek White as well. So I'm going over Jaylen. I'm going over, sorry, under on the 53s, you're going over, and we're both going under on the Derek White to motivate him to prove us wrong and to make his father happy. Dan, we've got Thanksgiving coming up. I wish you and yours a wonderful Thanksgiving, and don't forget to steal those phones, and don't forget to make sure that they subscribe to the big number. It might be awkward conversation if you're like, hey, big number? Can I see your big number? Make sure you're subscribed on the big number. Thank you. That would be a little weird. Question.
Do I have to, can I give them back? Is it a borrow thing or do I have to steal them? Do I have to actually steal all of their devices?
Borrow them and make sure, and basically until that subscribe button has been hit, then you can give it back.
Sorry. So it's more of a hostage like situation. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, that's good. As long as I know what kind of energy to bring into the Thanksgiving meal, then I think it'll all work out for everybody. But yes, Tom, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. To all of our listeners out there, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Thanks for riding with us, and we will be seeing you next week. So Tom, take us out.
Yeah. We're talking double team, you and me, Dan. We're going to go out on this one. We had to talk about the Tenacious D real quick. That's going to do it for today. Thanks to producers Joe and Brett. Appreciate you guys for filling in this week on the holiday week and producing this episode. Appreciate everyone at Yahoo, the entire team that works hard behind the scenes on this podcast. Please subscribe again to The Big Number wherever you listen and leave us a rate and review. We'll be back next week with another episode. Next week, Thursdays, every week. Until then.